How early is it? 7 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. 8 o'clock.
Are you on summertime yet?
No. Oh, but you.
Yeah,
are.
we're on summertime now. Even though it's snowing outside.
But the yeah. No, but we got our first. I think more or less first whiff of spring here this week and today.
How's that?
Well, the sun came out again.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And actually, on Thursday, I spent the day wearing shorts for the first time this
what?
Year. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So behind me, I don't know if you should be able to see it.
Yeah, you did some decorating.
I did some decorating. I put up some more pictures. It's all pictures of me and my band, or bands, different bands. But
Do you have dates?
There's more empty wall to put more pictures. The walls, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but the walls are really bad. I can't put anything into it. So it doesn't hold anything, any screws, and it doesn't hold anything. And so, but pictures are fine. So,
what are the walls made of?
I don't know. Probably just sand and water. There's this German saying that literal translation is sand and water. It's a wall too. But that's what it feels like.
All right. I thought all German walls by law had to be made of the hardest stone excavated from the depths of the ground.
This house,
I don't even know. I don't even know how y'all make. Do y'all make bricks? I don't even know.
Yeah. Sure. I have no idea about houses. Oh, that leads us to our main topic today. I'm telling you. But this house was built in the 30s, early 30s, by the, I think, SPD. Mayor of the city, and then he was kicked out at one point. And yeah, no, those walls don't hold anything. How are you doing?
I mean, hopefully they hold up the roof.
They hold up themselves. They don't hold up the roof. The roof is held up by some other walls.
You're saying they're non-structural walls.
These are definitely not non-structural. No.
And I thought I had problems with my house.
It's not my house, and I'm good. But yeah, you want to begin?
Yeah, let's do
it.
Shall
I do an intro?
Yes, I think an intro. I forgot how to do intros. Since I stopped,
yeah,
I think that the intro to the podcast that I listen to a lot right now, Trash Future, they start off talking about how. We're interested in a future where there is automated space, luxury communism, but really the future is just trash, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The only phrase I remember is automated space, luxury communism.
Well, whoever's listening to this is listening to Several Ways to Live. The title holds up very well, I think. It's really... It was a well chosen title, and this used to be about Mexican culture and especially food. Oh, did I mention that we're gonna fly to Mexico in December? Gonna spend next Christmas and New Year's in Mexico.
Where are you going?
Most of the time, so I'm going for 3 weeks. Catherine only has 2 weeks off, so I'm gonna go 1 week earlier than her. And I think I'm going to spend a week with Joshua, hopefully play some music. And then we're going to spend most of our time in the city with our friends Christiane and... with Christiane and her Mexican husband. They bought a house in one of the barrios. I don't know exactly where. I'm going to ask. But and then definitely we're going to fly out to Masunte and spend a few days at the beach.
Nice. That is nice. Very nice.
That is the plan.
Of course.
So and then we have to then we can do another Mexico podcast from Mexico. So that'll be good.
Ah, yes, of course.
Yeah, we have to do that. But today we're not going to talk about Mexico. Oh, and who are we? So we're bad at this intro stuff. We shouldn't do intros anymore. Or we should practice it, one or the other. I'm Florian. I'm in Mannheim, as always, when we record these right now. And you are?
I'm Nick. I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
As always.
Fortunately, we're going for a slight break. It snowed. It's been an incredibly mild winter here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Normally there's snow on the ground between December and February. Only been snow a couple of times. You've only managed to go on a ski. Kristen, my partner, who is the mother of my son, Raven, is a winter sports person, and she's only been able to go cross-country skiing, Nordic skiing. I don't know if that difference or the terminology matters.
Well, is there a difference between cross-country skiing and Nordic skiing?
For you? No, it's the same thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's just a way of, because when you say cross-country skiing to some people, they don't know what you mean. It's where you don't go. It's where you don't have a device take you to the top of a hill that you go down. It's where you just ski across fields. Or shockingly, that's the weird thing about cross country skiing is hills. Hills are a thing, and they happen.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't know it as cross country skiing, obviously, but also I spent a year in Norway. And there they do something slightly different, and in Germany there's the term ski touring. Ski touring is, I learned that later, is going up a hill and then going downhill with you know, skiing in the usual sense. But that's way too dangerous for me, so I don't do that. But what the Norwegians do, they have skis that have that are more durable, that can go uphill much better. They also have like fur stuff they put on there to go uphill, and they also have metal edges so that you can go down icy slopes much better. But it's still cross country skiing. They're slightly bigger, and I love doing that.
Is this telemark skiing?
I don't know what the English word for that is.
Okay.
They all look like cross-country skis, but are slightly broader and with metal edges.
Now, do the heels pop up or are the heels stuck?
Oh, they pop up. No, they're not stuck.
That's telemark skiing.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's how... So it's a skiing technique that combines elements of alpine and Nordic skiing.
No. Okay. Now then, that should be what I described as ski touring, or what I know as ski touring in Germany. That must be telemark skiing. That's not what I did. But yeah. So she usually goes cross country.
Usually, there are enough parks and trails in the city that we live in, Grand Rapids, or in and around the city.
Yeah.
That it's not hard for Kristen to find opportunities. I mean, she could go there. Our backyard is actually large enough to go cross country skiing in. She can do a loop in it. It's a very small plot of land in the scheme of things, but it's a very large backyard for backyards here. And so basically it snowed a lot yesterday, and it's going to snow a lot today, and it'll be the second time she's able to go cross country skiing. So for any skiing discipline, you need to have a base of snow.
Yeah.
There's, and then with that base, you groom it So you run a machine on it to make it able to go skiing on it. There's not, people stop doing that here because the season is just so mild. They put all the equipment away and they're not bringing it back out. So we have to go up north about 2 hours, roughly, like 150 kilometers up north of here across the 45th parallel, where they still have machines that are doing those things in a much larger base. And so that's what, and of course we also have a child and we have a goofy, I should send you a picture of us in what we call the Burley trailer. Think of a bike trailer for kids, only it has skis.
Yeah. Nice.
And it's quite a bit of exercise to pull that.
Yeah.
And the child, I mean, the child is not, I mean, the child's like 15 kilos now. That's not small.
No, you should put them on skis. As I said, I lived in Norway for a year. That was almost 20 years ago. And when you go out there, when you go skiing there, you see whole families. And I don't know how old the children are when they get onto skis, but it's not five, it's not four. I guess it's like when they start walking, pretty much. It's nice.
Nice. I was going to say something about that. He has skis, but he also, it's an opportunity thing. He hasn't had the opportunity to use the skis that much. So I think he'll do fine for like a half hour on skis and then get tired and then want to do something else.
Half an hour on skis is tiring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, that's the thing we're going to go do. Kristen also has the other big news. Aside from the big news in my life, is Kristen has an event today at the place that she used to, at the nature center that she used to work at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big emotional thing for her. So to catch you up, the summary, the, you know, 90-second summary at the beginning of the episode, if you watch Netflix and stuff like that, or have you ever power watched binge watched, where you watch a whole series of something, like all 10 episodes in one sitting.
Sure.
And you don't skip through the summary because you want to see what the upcoming episode is going to focus on. So the only reason they bring up old plot points from prior episodes is to see, oh, that thing is coming back. Oh, that thing is, oh, they're going to resolve that. Or, oh, that character, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Some people skip them. I don't. So the summary there, let's see how, time me. Somebody in the time me in the comments and tell me how long it takes me to do this. So I moved back from Mexico, lived here for about a year. And in that year's time, I volunteered at a nature center where I met Kristen. We got together. Kristen got pregnant with our son, Raven, about 4 years ago now. And when the pandemic started, Kristen lost the job that she had for almost 20 years at the nature center, moved houses, and became a mom. So that transition shifted her whole life quite a bit. I mean, I just became a dad and started working from home as opposed to being in an office. Oh, and bought a house a kilometer away from the house I grew up in, which I never thought would happen. But long story short, most of Kristen's waking hours have been devoted to our child. And she didn't get the opportunity to go back to work like she thought she would. And so now she's going to go do the job that she did for 20 years, only for free. And it's been an emotional roller coaster for her. because a lot of her, as she said on Facebook, a lot of her identity was built around being the master naturalist at the Nature Center. And so now she's going to go back and do that. Plus, because it was during the pandemic, a bunch of people lost their jobs and she didn't have the opportunity to have a normal closing ritual. Which in that kind of a space is important. You know, the jobs that I've had as an accountant, it's just like, oh, okay, I'm here one day, gone the next. Nobody really cares. Like there was one time when I worked for an HR department for about a year that I actually had a going away party at work. And when you're an accountant, that's normal. When you're only in a place for two years goes by like that. When you're gone, people don't really notice. I mean, the one exception to that in my working career was when I was at Intuit, and every season, you know, there would be a tax season with a beginning and an end. And at the end of the season, after all the returns are done, after people, you know, leave, we have, there are closing rituals, just like it, and a season just being like a season of theater or a season of sport, you know. You have the standard closing rituals, that's one thing, but Krista never got a chance to say goodbye or a chance to have her work for so many years recognized. And when you're an accountant, you get paid. You know, you get a decent living, and a lot of what you get paid for is paid for your discretion and paid not to care. In the Nature Center world, you don't make... I honestly have no idea how Kristen was able to buy a house with what she made. That I'm looking at that, and I'm just, especially since she bought it at the worst time to buy a house, right before the boom. The good part about that is Kristen at least now has the savings from that house built up, and she's not spending it. You know, she doesn't have like my job, and I take care of all those living expenses, but. And eventually when Raven goes to school, Kristen's might want to go back to work. Yeah. And I think a lot of those feelings are coming up for her right now. And this is a difficult part for her. Personally, for me, I guess my old big news is I am full-time employed again. Yay. I was out of work since May of last year. And I thought it would be really easy for me to get a job again. But it really wasn't, shockingly. I don't know what happened. It just took much longer than I thought it would, mostly because now I take this back. If I wanted to go back to an office, I could have gotten a job very easily, but I don't want to do that. I'm never going to do that. I'm not going back to an office. There's no reason for an accountant. I can't speak to other industries. I can't. From personal experience, I can't speak to other industries. Everything an accountant does is in front of a screen. Some accountants have to go in and actually count physical objects occasionally. But when all you do is taxes, you're stuck in front of your 20 screens. I have 20 screens right now. I have to look at all 20 screens because they all have a different part of the tax. I'm joking. I only have 3 screens. I want to get one of those gigantic gamer screens, to be totally honest with you. The really big, that's the new thing.
The curved ones?
The curved screens have they're only for two kinds of people, gamers and tax accountants. That's about all that can, those are the only justifications for having it, I think. Programmers, maybe. But honestly, because tax accountants need to see, okay, maybe web programmers need to see, you know, how their code changes in like 3 different browsers. But the thing about tax accountants is that the minimum that we can use is 3 screens, because we have the source information, we have the tax entry part, but then we also have to look to see what it does on the government form. Because I don't know how German taxes work, but the way American taxes work is we have to see what it does to the paper form. Because depending on where the numbers, like what we put in the entry screen that makes more logical sense, we'll do a different thing on various different parts of the government form that we need to look at. And sometimes because the tax software makes, the longer story short, is the tax software makes certain assumptions to help save time, and sometimes those assumptions are wrong. This is why tax accounting is a profession, not a not just a regular. There are sections of the tax world doing personal tax returns that are more clerk level things, but when you're dealing with, in my case, hospitality funds, where you have, say, 100 investors who buy 4 or 5 luxury properties in the middle of nowhere, and then you have a management company running those properties, and they have one set of books, and then you have the set of books for the owners, which is a set of books on top of that, and then you have to combine it all so that all of these, like, 100 investors know how much money they lost, because they always lose money. They, for tax purposes, they always lose money. Yeah. I mean, that's just what it is.
So who do you work for now? Can you tell? Is it some evil corporation and you need the money?
No, it's not an evil. It is a non-publicly traded. I work for basically an up-and-coming accounting business. It's not really a firm because it's not owned by CPAs. I'm the only CPA there, the only registered accountant, the only Wirtschaftsprüfer. I think is the German term.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a different word for accountants that primarily do tax?
Yeah. So there's Steuerberater. That's the usual word. And Wirtschaftsprüfer is someone who checks the books. So who doesn't do the books, but checks that everything's okay.
Right. So that's the primary meaning behind certified public accountant. It means that you have a license from the government to check books. But what most CPAs do is just tax work. And that's what it's one license that covers both in the country. I should really figure out how it works in Germany at some point. But the place I work for is the story there. Two business partners who came out of the hospitality industry.
Can you quickly explain what that is?
They run hotels and restaurants.
Oh, okay.
So, like, when we talk about the hospitality industry, it's a way of, in any context where your customer could be considered your guest. So when you're in a restaurant, your customer is your guest. When you're in a hotel, your customer is your guest. When you're running an Airbnb, your customer is your guest. That's the very simple way of putting it. But they run hotel. They came from the corporate hotels world, and then they met people. And they are members of and primarily work for and around people who are part of the capital class in capitalism. They're not the working class, they're the capital owners class. Now they work very hard, and that's the thing about people who are in the capital class tend to be trust fund babies or work very hard managing all of the capital that they own, right? They're very nice people. I like them a lot. Like they're really great. I love the environment. They're really good managers. And I think you don't get to be at that level unless you are you can inherit your wealth and be awful and, you know, and be very incredibly manipulative, but they're really good guys. They come out of that world, and I am the first tax accountant that they're hiring because they're basically building an accountancy concern out of their network of people that they create funds with. But their primary day-to-day is managing hospitality investments.
Okay. So that was a digression from the summary that you wanted. Were you finished with your life summary
No, the life summary is the 90 seconds explaining how I got from Mexico to being in the Midwest with a mortgage, a child, and a partner. Okay. That everybody thinks is my wife. And we're not technically married.
Yeah. Who cares?
Oh, a lot of people care around here.
Oh,
like that's I live in Trump. Remember, I live in Trumplandia. You know, they just assume that we're married in the way that people assume you're a Christian.
Well, you're white, so why wouldn't you? Yeah, okay.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. But
are you one of the gays? Are you a transgender? Why are you introducing yourself with your pronouns? Oh, grief. Or when my parents, when I referred to Raven as a they instead of a he, got really upset. Where they was just another way of saying it grammatically correct, where you could go either way. You know, like, they're here. They in the singular is now a political act in the U.S., but we're not going to go there.
No, not today. But let's go where you are right now, because we must have talked about home ownership about 2 years ago, because I found a direct message from Don talking about it, and there was a very lengthy comment on our WordPress by Sebastian almost exactly 2 years ago. And I think at that point, I don't know what we talked about, but I know that my opinion hasn't changed. I don't want to own a home, but can get to that later. But we should talk one more time about home ownership. And to start this off, and maybe then you can put your thoughts to it. Let me quote Don and Sebastian. Don basically says, they don't want to deal with other people in the same building anymore. They want to, so that's why they want to own things, own a home. They want to be able to change it any way they want. You know, putting in new walls or getting rid of old ones, updating heating and so on. So, and as long as a landlord or other people in the same building are involved, that's just hard. Or impossible. And now, maybe let me... so any comments to that?
A lot of comments.
Okay.
But let's get into it first.
Let me read most of Sebastian's comment, and then we'll get into it. So he says, and that was... April 22, about the house discussion. I've just moved in a new apartment with my girlfriend. We plan on buying a house in the next 4 to 5 years. Sebastian, tell us how that's going. There are a couple of factors why we want our own place. We have yet to meet a landlord that actually cares about the state of their building. So we basically moved from unmaintained apartment to a not really well-maintained apartment, and I can't imagine doing that for the rest of my life. Sure, there are better places for rent out here, but they also cost twice as much. I'm also not sure that the German retirement system will still function once I'm 70, or however old I am when I finally get to retire. So I'm expecting to live off money I saved up somehow. If we buy a house, at least we will have a place to live that's reasonably cheap. And if everything else fails, we can sell it. Secondly, I think that's a very good point now. I can buy an old house and fix it up myself. Spend a lot of time helping family and friends renovate their places. Electricity, drywall, water, tiles, wallpaper, I've done all of that at some point. And for the stuff I'm not qualified or comfortable with, I know people who might do me a favor or at least help me for a reasonable price. We both want to live in one of the small villages in, I'm not going to pronounce that, I don't know. In German, it's Rheinland-Pfalz. In English, it's a crazy word. And depending on where you look, you can get cheap houses there. Then it talks about financing, blah, blah. Lastly, and this goes back to what Don says. I really would like to have my own garden where I can have grill parties with friends, grow stuff, put my ham radio antennas. Also, in general, living in a place that we can just change however we like it without having to negotiate with landlords first. First of all, thank you both for these comments. And I'm very happy that we finally get to talk about this.
I'm going to preface my thoughts by saying I don't know what the economics of home ownership are in Germany.
Yeah.
And I always like to say, I always like to preface home ownership by saying you have to look at your long-term economics and your economic preferences and your skills before figuring out whether or not it makes sense to buy a home. I'll never forget. So I used to hang out in a coffee shop, and I hung out there so much that occasionally when people would call in, I would go behind the counter and work the coffee shop. But even then, that was when I was studying to be an accountant. And even as a student accountant, I would be getting paid two or three times what somebody would be getting paid working at the coffee shop. And this was right before the housing crisis in the United States came into full swing, 2007, 2008. The long story short there was the world was awash in money that was seeking a safe but large return. So they poured all of this money into mortgages in the United States. And there was a greater money supply, a greater money supply for mortgages than there were mortgages to give in the United States. So mortgages became very, very cheap. And the lending quality behind those mortgages became very lax, which led to the whole housing crisis. So housing prices went way up, then they collapsed.
How did you like the movie, The Big Short?
I loved it. It was great. So, I mean, I liked it because it presented the anecdotal qualities of that crisis very well. And it did, I thought it did a good job of explaining the much more, I gave a very simple explanation. When you're talking about major practices in the capital markets, they're very complicated concepts to explain to somebody who doesn't have prior knowledge. And I thought the movie did a very good job. That it did two things. It did a good job of explaining it. And when faced with the choice of dumbing something down and being wrong for the sake of expediency, it chose being technically correct, even if it was more confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And movies about economic concepts and things like that. It's very hard to do those sorts of things. So you have to think about the economics of whether or not it makes sense. In the U.S., there is this, maybe not so much anymore, but when I was growing up, And even still to some extent, whether or not you own your own home is a metric of success. It's like, I own my own home. That's a mm-hmm. metric of success, mm-hmm. right? I don't know what it's like in Germany. Is it that way in Germany?
I don't know. For many people, it is. But also then you can own a fancy car that much better represents your success.
So there are metrics of success and there are status symbols. I own my own home as a metric of success. Now I have
I don't think it does in Germany.
No.
But I may be totally wrong. But keep going. Yeah, we'll talk about the economics of home ownership in Germany.
So I own my own home on its own. I own my own freestanding building on my own piece of land. So basically it's a like a, it's like 185 square meter house on about, on about like 500 square meters of land.
Sounds nice.
So the 180 square meters is split between three stories. You know, I have an upstairs where I'm at now. There's a main level and there's a basement. And that's a small single family home in the United States. I bought it for just under $300,000. And I bought it right when they started selling homes again during the pandemic. So people were very, banks were desperate to make loans because loans weren't happening. And some people were motivated to sell their house to do something else. So I got a very good deal. To give you an idea, the interest rate that I'm paying on the loan for my house is less than the interest rate on my first savings account. It's very odd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now, of course, interest rates have gone way up. So there's different movements. Without getting into the economics of things, when you're in the United States, what I encourage people to do, it doesn't matter whether you own your house, unless you're buying your house in cash, but even then there's a cost. There's a certain amount of money that you're not going to get back right away. There's always a rent cost. So when you rent a house, you have a rental payment to a landlord, and the landlord takes care of everything. Hopefully, theoretically, that's what they're supposed to do. When you own your own home, there's all of the repairs that you have to make. There's the interest that you pay to the bank. There's the taxes. There's all those things that are so. And when you're looking at the economics of things like that, and as Sebastian brought up, there's a time factor. When you rent your house, you don't have to dedicate much time to your house. You know, you don't own it. You have to look at all of those factors before deciding whether or not it makes sense. So right here in the Midwest, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is not a very high demand place to live, compared to other places like New York, San Francisco, I make enough to be able to own my own house here. I don't make enough to be able to own a family house in a San Francisco or New York or a major metropolitan area, at least in the urban core where I would want to live. You know, people have houses, you know, I could maybe buy a house in Concord, maybe, which is it's the end of the commuter train. So basically the end of the regional bond for that area, equivalent. There are a lot of people who will make the simple explanation of, yes, you should absolutely buy a house or own your own home. That's not always true here. It's not a bad thing to rent. The other factor is you have to save for your retirement. You have to save for the time when it doesn't make economic sense for you to work anymore. You know, if you're a doctor or a surgeon or a pilot or something that requires physical dexterity and physical spatial awareness, you know, you're for most doctors should not work beyond the age of 70. You know, I think mandatory retirement age for pilots is less than that. Accountants die at their desk. Like, let's be real. A lot accountants can work until they die for the most part. Because we have, you know, whereas pilot, I just think about it this way. Pilots have seconds to make decisions that affect the lives of the people that they're working for. Accountants are never in that position.
Yep.
Accountants and accountants can go fix their mistakes pretty easily, generally. Most of the time. And I think when you're figuring out to, when you're wondering whether or not you should own your own house, you have to think about whether or not it makes sense to for your retirement. Now, in my case, it makes sense for me to divert income into a house and a property that will theoretically gain value slightly above inflation. You know, I, for as much as this, this area of the area that I'm in the country continues to grow. You know, people want to come here. It's, and when we're looking at all the, you know, long disaster, water, different things like that, it's an area that is a safer decision to live and invest in. If I was in New York or San Francisco, I would, I could maybe choose to sacrifice to try to buy a house, but that wouldn't be a very, it would be much better for me to put that money into a pension account, you know, a tax advantaged pension account, and for me to grow my savings. Now, here's the thing. Every time you invest, people think, oh, you're investing for creating wealth. And no, you're making a bet. You're basically putting your, you're basically in the capital markets. It's a bet. Now there's, it's way better. So that's the thing. It's way better than making a bet in a casino, but it's still a bet. You can still lose money. The difference between a bet in a, in the capital markets and a bet in a casino is that when you lose a, when you win a bet in a casino, you get the chance to walk away with that money. When you lose a bet in the casino, they take all of that money. In the capital markets, you might lose everything. You might be wiped out, but over a sufficient enough time horizon, diversified over a sufficient enough time horizon, you know, it may gain its value back. It may not, but it's still a bet. Even buying a house is a bet. The thing about a house is you still have the house. There, it's there unless you can no longer pay for it. They're unlikely to take it away, but it's still a bet. And I think when you live in a San Francisco or a New York or an urban environment, it makes more sense to rent and then use the money that you would otherwise use to own some own a house and make a bet in the capital markets that is much more likely to grow and appreciate, so that when you retire, if you want to keep living in the place you're living at, you you buy there.
So
that's my the short story of my all my thoughts on that.
So is it a purely economic decision for you whether you when you bought your house?
No. It's and
it's more than that, isn't it?
Well, the economics of my situation worked out. Now, granted, economics is not just money, it also means your preferences. So when Sebastian is talking about how I can fix most of the things in my house, that's an economic preference because he prefers to do the work that he can do himself himself. And it also costs him a lot less to do that work himself. So those are economics. So there's the economics of it costing less money and the economics of the preferences. And yes, it is somewhat reductive of me to just talk about economics. Now, it when I bought my house, the non-monetary economic concerns were, one, I have a child. And children need care. You can't leave a toddler alone for a significant amount of time in a house. And so when I, and when Kristen and I found out we were pregnant, never thinking we'd be pregnant, our economic rationale changed. At the time, we were both living in her house, and that was fine. It was fun. It was great living in her house. She liked living in her house. It was the house that she bought with her ex-husband when they were married. Ex-husband moved out. She kept the house. She got the house in the divorce. Mostly because the ex-husband didn't want to be bothered with it. Like, I mean, he still had a kegerator in the basement.
A what?
So people who brew beer,
oh,
like a keg of beer, it's a refrigerator,
yeah,
that keeps the keg cold. Yeah. Kegerator. So, and so it's basically a, you know, they drilled holes in a refrigerator to keep a keg. Anyway, but when we got pregnant, her house is not large enough for a child. Like, she didn't have a second room for the child. So we had to buy a house, and her house is on the other side of the city. From where my parents were. Mm-hmm. Now, we were thinking, the big mistake that people make when they buy a house close to their parents, thinking that the grandparents are going to take care of the kids. If your parents are in their 70s, they're not going to be able to keep up with a toddler for more than 2 or 3 hours, unless they're very fit. And my dad used to be very fit. He's not so fit anymore. Old age got him. My mom's never been that fit. Fortunately, he can spend 2 or 3 hours there at a time. But anyway, with the economics that went into the decision to buy this house that I live in are, one, Kristen and I need a bigger house. Two, Kristen's not working anymore. It took her a while to realize it, but it was better for her to convert the equity that she had in her house to cash, invest the cash, and live off of, or now granted, she can't provide for all of her needs off of the investment income that she's making from her house. But she has savings. Like, she has a safety net. She has a significant safety net if anything happens to the two of us. And so that's an economic decision that she was renting it to somebody who wasn't paying her rent and who wasn't improving the house like they said they would. It was actually making it worse. But so she sold the house, and it's not an economic liability for her anymore, and she has cash. Mm-hmm. So there. And then for me, it was I had rented my entire life. I mean, up until Mexico City, because the economics there made sense to buy. I still had my house in Mexico City, my studio apartment. You remember my studio apartment?
I do.
Like, the, which is, it's about 75%, it was about 75% of the floor space of the upstairs of my current house. Mm-hmm. I loved that apartment. I miss that apartment. I go back to it. Some, it's an Airbnb now. Like, it was an Airbnb.
Oh yeah.
For most of the time I owned it.
Do you know, you have to, if you know who owns it now, if we need, we may need an Airbnb for a few days, then we want to take that one.
Yeah, I should, we'll put it, you know what? We'll put that Airbnb in the show notes. How about
okay.
that?
Very
yeah.
good.
I will do the show notes if you ever post. Now, granted, we're recording this and I don't think you've posted the last episode.
No, the last episode
as recording
is still, I'm gonna edit the last episode after
okay.
we finish this and then, yep.
Okay.
You have to take that?
Did my audio cut out there for a second?
No, just heard a ring.
That was Raven calling me, and Raven's calling me again. That was my child who, like, he doesn't actually have a, so he uses one of my old cell phones, but there's no cell phone service on it. It just uses Wi-Fi. And of course, even like it, I know this sounds weird. I have a 3-year-old that's had a phone for a year and knows how to use the phone. It's like we're a family of pixels. Kristen has my old Pixel 4. Raven has. Okay. I'll put the Pixel numbers that this family owns that were all mine at one point. All of those Pixels were mine at one point. But now Kristen got my most recent hand-me-down and Kristen got the hand-me-down from Kristen after that. So every time I upgrade, everybody else in the family gets an upgrade. And, I don't mean to be a shill for, I don't mean to buzz market Android Pixel phones, but are you an Android user or iPhone user?
No, iPhone for many years.
Okay. All right. But I got the very first iPhone when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had the Palm Pilot that was a cell phone. Okay. Like I was an early adopter. That's kind of the cell phone way of saying I used to market trips in Bitcoin. I even forget how much I think at the time it was, I remember selling a Hackers on a Plane trip for what I think was 133.7 Bitcoins, which was around maybe, I think, $2,000 mm-hmm. at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine what would have happened if I had kept that? We should do the Bitcoin rant episode at some point.
Okay.
Because the punchline to that whole episode is the capital markets destroyed Bitcoin, destroyed the threat of Bitcoin by making it an investment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've seen it. My only thought about Bitcoin is I remember distinctly when it was around 25 euros. And I did not have even 25 euros to invest. So I never had any Bitcoin.
Bitcoin was never meant to be an investment.
No. Yeah. But anyways, back to homeownership. All right. I think you were through. So I don't really know the economics of home ownership in Germany. The most recent piece of information I got is from a friend, the husband of a very good friend of Catherine's. They recently bought, or 2 years ago, bought a house. They also bought it. You want to buy it after people built it, and then they get divorced and no longer can afford it. That's when you want to buy it. Right?
Okay.
That's also...
That's actually not terribly far off for being in the U.S. either, because you've got motivated sellers.
And also, I mean, right, for reasons I make it into later now today, I'll talk about that later. So the few cases where we might buy in the future. Anyways, shout out to Dominic. He told us basically, I mean, it's a huge house. I don't know who thought of building a massive.
How many square meters?
Way over 200. And three stories or four stories. It's big. It's really big. It's way too big for one family, but it's what it was built as a one family home. Crazy. Anyway, so he is a physicist too, so he calculated everything, and in the end he says, it's not really a good investment from the purely economic side of things. But they, and that is very prevalent, what's the right word, notion, for Germans, they wanted to own their own home. So the preference of many, many people is to own a home. I don't think it's even as common to own their own home as in the US. But many people really want their own home, just to have their own home, which you have to respect that. That's okay. But that it goes... This is separate from what, for example, Don and Sebastian said, that they want to be able to change things and not rely on other people and not to talk to the landlord. It's really about the feeling of owning your own home.
Like, what is the key economic preference?
What do you mean?
So for Sebastian and Dominic, their key economic preference is being able to have a home they can modify however they like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The economic preference that you were just describing is the feeling of owning your own home.
Yeah.
my key economic preference is having a house close to my parents so that my child can grow up around their grandparents.
Mm-hmm. Mine and Catherine's primary economic preference is not to own anything and not to be responsible for something big as a house or even an apartment.
Flexibility. Life yeah. flexibility. Life flexibility is your key economic. And that's what I mean. You can't reduce everything to one thing, but you can look at things through that one lens. And it's better to make a complex set of decisions easier to make, looking at it through what is your key economic preference. And your key economic preference will change. Before Raven existed, my key economic preference is also flexibility. I mean, I was interviewing with accounting firms in Reno. I was ready to become a full-time burner, an East Jesus going burner. Shout out in the comments if anybody knows what East Jesus is, or Slab City. I am going to call you one of these days from Slab City.
Okay.
We're going to do we're going to do the Slab City episode at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when you become a parent, stuff really changes.
I bet it does.
I love my child. I'm very happy to be Raven's dad. I'm very happy Raven is a part of my life. Don't have kids unless that is absolutely a part of what you want to do with your life. And if you have kids, I'm talking to boomers here. If you have kids, don't encourage other people to have kids. It's the same thing as buying a house. Don't encourage people to buy houses. It might not be right for them. Kids might not be right for you. Owning a house might not be right for you. I know you and Catherine, and it is not. Kids and owning a house is not for you.
No, it's not. Going back to the Germans that really, really, really want to have their own home, what we see among some of our friends and also other people is colleagues, and not to pick anyone out specifically, is that the preference to own your own home is so strong that we've heard many stories where families have put themselves in a very, very tight economic situation, speaking broadly. More specifically, you have two parents and then one or two children, and you want your own home. And buying homes in the last years, it's gotten ridiculously expensive in Germany. Buying a home like you did with over 180 square meters for 300,000 in whatever currency is not a thing in Germany. You have to go very, very far off grid to get something like that. It's not possible in any major city. And Grand Rapids is a major city.
No, it's not.
It's a minor city. Okay. I don't know.
I mean, the population of the metropolitan area is around 500,000 people.
Oh, that's far less than I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
Then I'll take that back.
Let me verify. That's what I'm saying. Let me verify that. Well, but here's the thing. Germany, the population, the average population density in the United States. Remember, the U.S. is a very new country.
Yeah. It's so large.
Like, the land that I'm sitting on was a forest, was an old-growth forest. Actually, no. The land that I was sitting on was farmland 100 years ago, and it was old-growth forest 150 years ago.
So, what we see is, basically, they calculate, okay, how much can we spend on interest and paying back the loan for the next 30 years? How much can we afford to do that? And then they both parents have to keep working. And some of them even have to keep working full time, both of them. It's one crazy story. And which, of course, doesn't work because Germany's support system for families and children is not as good. To put it mildly, not as good as it should be, because it's not. I don't believe it's possible for two parents to go work full time and have children. It's just not.
It is when you have childcare.
Yeah, but in Germany, there's no. If you can afford it, if you earn really a lot of money, but then you don't have to both go and work if you have enough money. But so childcare is not up to supporting two working parents in Germany. It works if one of them works half time, and yes, that's still in 95% of cases. It's the wife that's or the woman that works part-time. We hear these stories and we know that if anything goes wrong in their lives, if one of them loses their job, if one of them gets ill and cannot work anymore, they're going to lose the house because, I mean, they're not going to be able to pay for it anymore. And that is something, this is not about Don and Sebastian here. This is just some stories that we hear. Some are more reasonable. They had savings that helped them get the house, and it makes a lot of sense for them. But we hear so many crazy stories of people that have no margin of error after buying their own home anymore. And that is, people should see your eyes now. That is just crazy. And now, so our theory is we're not going to buy now. We're going to wait 10 more years. And then everyone who got their homes with the cheap loans that they got in the last 5 years in Germany as well, they're going to sell. And until then, we will have some savings of our own and then we'll buy. Maybe if we want to. I'm not even sure if we want to buy in 10 or 20 years. So that is all I know about home ownership in Germany. And yeah, you know us pretty well. And it's not even that we plan on leaving Germany for an extended period of time again, which is still true, but who knows when that's going to happen. But right now we cannot imagine being attached to a home that is in one place. And we also we're happy. Of course, we have an awesome landlord. They live in this house. So we were so lucky getting this apartment when we moved about a year and a half ago. We moved out of the inner city of Mannheim into, it's still just 7 minutes by bike to the main train station, which is what we care about. But it's very quiet. There's three families living in this building. They're all nice, and we like the landlords. They like us, and we talk about everything, and they want to keep this place in a very good shape. That is obviously, and it's not even that expensive. We pay a very, very good price, especially for the area we live in. That makes it much easier to just live here and pay our rent, obviously. Oh. Who knows what it's going to be in 10 years? We don't know, but we also don't care. We'll know when we know.
And you know, like 10 years from now, I was just having this conversation on another thing to put in the show notes. I should be keeping a list of stuff to put in the show notes. And I will write. You know what would be interesting is if I did the show notes before you posted the episode.
That would be interesting.
If you could make that happen. I have two Fediverse accounts now. Do we just call the Fediverse? Some people are just calling it Mastodon, which I know is technically incorrect, but if that's what people refer to it as, whatever.
Depends. Do you have accounts on something other than Mastodon? And you're back. Are you back? I saw you posted something the other day.
I mean, okay. Mastodon is the television. The Fediverse is the content. This is the way of describing the content delivery channel.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mastodon is just the TV. We don't call it Samsung, you know? I'm going to go watch some Samsung, right?
Let's go with Fediverse.
Okay, Fediverse. I mean, I don't know. If we're focusing on the decentralization, anyway. So I am on chaos.social. I am Nick Farr at chaos.social. And I am Brace at DPW Social.
Nice.
Which is a instance. Do we call it an instance?
Yeah, officially it's still an instance, but
okay,
it's unofficially clear that there has to be a different name for that.
Okay, anyway, let it correct us in the show notes. It's pretty much just the guy who started the server and me. That's it.
Yeah.
Because it was a server that he put out there for members of DPW, the civic grunts of Black Rock City, the people who build the temporary city of Black Rock City where an event called Burning Man takes place.
DPW stands for Department of Public Works.
Yes.
Good.
Your average city will your city will have a Department of Public Works. And that's why it was called that. Will Roger, who I need to write, we should do an episode about Will. I should interview Will Roger for a podcast episode at one point. For this podcast, it's one guy who's all like, who used to be a member of the Burning Man Department of Public Works. I am nominally a member of the Burning Man Department of Public Works as a bus driver. I drove a resto bus. Did we ever have it? Did we ever talk about me driving the resto bus? Did we talk about that in the last episode?
That's on the unpublished episode, yes.
Okay, it's on the unpublished episode. And it's just him and I, and I'm trying to get, like, another thing I should talk about that I want to talk about in the episode is I went back to Meta Properties. I have Facebook and Instagram on my phone again.
Okay.
I doom scroll and I browse them because I don't like it. I don't like the fact that I have to go there to see what's going on with my friends. Mm. Like, being on Facebook and Instagram is like going to a place that I hate to see people that I love. And so I chose to go to the place that I hate because I want to keep in contact with the people I love, and the people I love are there. When I wasn't working between May and February, I got very depressed. I was in a very deep depression when we recorded the last episode. And it felt even like when I was depressed in Mexico after breaking up with Paulina, I was still in Mexico. It was sunny. I went on walks. When you're depressed and you have a toddler that is just a bundle of raw emotion, most of which is happiness if they're loved and cared for. Being depressed takes on a different tinge of incredible guilt. Like, there is an incredible guilt to being depressed. It's like, why am I depressed when I am blessed with this wonderful child? And it's a downward spiral that is a new experience in depression for me. And I'm glad that I'm out of it And it's, I came very close to starting to take medication for it, realizing that I was at the point where, yeah, I just kind of need this. I lost friends. I don't know how many friends I've lost. I'm now in the part where I'm going back and getting back in touch with a bunch of friends. Like there's, I think our friendship by virtue of having the podcast is we're always going to be in contact, and I don't think there's going to be any guilt between going months, and we tend to pick things up right away, and we have a very special friendship by virtue of this podcast, which I'm very grateful for. But now I'm writing back friends that I haven't, that I left on read, as the kids say these days, for years. And it's interesting. One person who I didn't really know that well when I knew them, you know, somebody who was a person that, that whose name I remembered when I saw them at the Congress, if that makes sense. We're in a very long, deep email exchange, and they're very good at writing me back right away. Most of the people that I write, I'll send a message to them. They'll be like, oh, it's so great to hear from you, blah, 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 blah. And then they'll send a message. I'll send a message back, and I won't hear from them again. That's okay. That's what it is. I still have to write everybody back who wrote me during the Congress. That's an emotional point that I'm... there's a lot of emotions there. But it's good to not be as in my depression as I was when I wasn't working. And I really hope this job works out.
Well, I hope so too. All right.
Because it's a this is a perfect job because it's remote. They don't care that I'm chained to my desk as long as I get things done. Like that's what work should be. It should be remote if possible, and you shouldn't have to be chained to your desk. Right?
Right.
Speaking of work, you've got something going on at work, which I don't know if you can talk about yet or not.
Well, by the time this goes out, it'll be official. So I can talk about it, because hopefully only a few days ago, I have already, so at this point, I've already written the announcement that I'm going to put onto our general channel in Slack. We still use Slack. I hate that stuff. But I don't know what is better. Anyways, that's Slack. Doesn't matter.
What is the alternative? Mattermost?
I don't know. Maybe just not speak.
I like that. What's the alternative? Let's just not talk.
So I'm going to put out a post where I'm going to announce that the... Okay, I've learned a few new vocabularies. The Group Works Council of the DB, the Deutsche Bahn, the big state-owned, still, thankfully, still state-owned train company in Germany, and they all have also loads of other stuff, but mainly trains. They have a works council, a group works council, as it's called, and they will appoint me and four others, mainly me and two others, and then two so-called substitute members, as the election committee for our first works council election. Works council is English for Betriebsrat. And I work at Aoki, which is wholly owned by the DB. And me and two colleagues, we've been talking to a works council member of a sister company and two union secretaries of the big German transportation union called, it's the EVG. Talking about how can we create a Betriebsrat, a works council at Aoki. And maybe in a future episode, we can go more into detail about how that works. It was a long learning experience because in general, not many people know how that works. And within the DB group, there's not many new works councils being created because most of the companies that work in transportations, they already have one. I mean, the EVG, it's a union that is, I don't know, over 100 years old. It's really, really old. So, but the group works council, they appoint us as the election committee, which doesn't mean that we are the works council. We are the election committee to run the election for our first works council. And that is pretty cool. Yes, we're gonna hopefully be elected as works council members after all the work that we've done so far. Now I never wanted to be a member of the works council, but now I want to because I did all the work. And so whoever listens to this and when you listen to this first time, there will not be a works council yet, unless I can't edit this in 3 months. But at one point in the summer of 2024, my company will get their first works council, and that'll be cool. I know that there's not going to be big problems coming from management. I can maybe let's get back to it in a few months. and that is my big things that actually for a few weeks, so the last few months, sometimes that is all I could work on and think about. And so even my bands, which usually take up all my spare abilities for thinking, so my what's a good word? I don't know. So I have a certain amount of energy for thinking and working, and most of the time this all goes to the band. And some of it goes to work, and but for a few weeks, everything went into planning for this election, which is fine. Once this announcement is made, everything else I do for this election, for the Works Council election, will be on company time. So this is all work time. And everything we need for that, it's going to be paid by the company. And that is by law. We have a law. It's in German. It's the Betriebsverfassungsgesetz. Direct translation would be a works constitution law. Works, something like that. And it states very clearly that everything you need to hold this election, you get paid, and you also the time and the training you need and all the office stuff that you need. And that's the same also for the Works Council itself. Once that's formed, we'll have our own office, we'll have office staff, and we'll get training for that. And this is all within our usual work time, and every expense is paid by the company. That's pretty cool. Yeah, so that's going to happen. And we'll see how that goes. And now on this recording...
That's some big news.
Yeah, it is. So we're recording on March 23rd. The message will go out next week, because next week is when the group works council meets, and for a 4-day meeting. And in that time, this will all happen. And then I'm very glad that I don't have to keep any secrets anymore.
No more secrets. Yay.
And which movie does this remind you of? Oh no, the phrase "there was too many secrets." Okay. Post in the comments. Comment.
Yeah.
Do you know which movie I'm thinking
about?
Does
anybody post in the comments anymore?
No, they don't. But on maybe they do on Mastodon or on Mastodon. Yeah.
Hit us up in the Fed. This is actually an interesting thing about prepositions. Hit us up in the comments in the Fediverse or on Mastodon. And I think the prepositions are I'm gonna get off my high horse about prepositions. We've been going for about an hour and a half. Do you think this is a logical point to wrap things up?
Oh yes, it is.
Okay, perfect. Talk about prepositions in the comments. You know what would be interesting? So Kristen, like I said at the beginning of the episode, it snowed. It's been a mild winter. Kristen and I are going to go a little further north from here to go enjoy the snow, so we can basically do our cross country, our Nordic skiing. Daddy might get some alpine skiing, and it's been a while since Daddy's gone alpine skiing. Daddy might want to rent some alpine skis and, you know, do a little bit of alpine skiing if that's a thing. But if you can post the episode in our internal system, I can listen to it and make sure that I get the show notes done before you post the last episode.
Okay.
If I can get the recording file, because then we'll listen to it. I think it would be good for Kristen. It would be good for Kristen and I to listen to this as we drive up to go.
Oh yeah, I can do that. I can do that. No problem.
Perfect. Yay.
Nice. It's been great talking to you.
Same here. Let's do this again soon.
Yes. Say hello to your family and have fun in the snow.
Okay, we'll do, and have fun. Oh, what are your dates?
Oh, dates, most important date with the band this year is July 21st. It's a Sunday night when we play at the Zelt Musik Festival, the biggest festival. It's a multi-week festival in Freiburg. We play on a Sunday night, July 21st, in the Fürstenberg Zelt. That might be our biggest date yet in our 18-year history. And in September, we will go back to Speyer to play at the Altstadtfest. And I just confirmed that we'll play in Heidelberg again in November. And there'll be some more dates, but I'm so glad that we finally get to start putting out these dates. Yeah. And I'm playing with the Heidelberg pop rock cover band again that I left last year, but now I'm back and I don't have to go to all the rehearsals, so it's perfect for me. I play all the concerts, but don't have to go to all the rehearsals. That's how you want to do it. And the next public appearance is April 30th. On the Wilhelmsplatz in Heidelberg. Yeah.
Nice.
That's very nice.
Alrighty. Have fun.
You too.
Bye. See you guys next time.